Midge goes back to jail, defies the American justice system, and Joel comes crawling back. All that and more here on the after show for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
So long.
Babs.
Sad times.
Always good to hear.
Go Question long, for the table. Is there a show on TV with better music, do you think?
No. We are rid of you. I guess if you really don't like the music of the 50s and 60s, then 100% yes. But
I was listening to, there's a podcast I like a lot called Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'd recommend it if you guys haven't heard of it. But they were talking about how not only is music great, but it fits so well. Where the lyrics are just so perfect to what's happening on the show. And that show, of course, guys, is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel here on AfterBuzz TV. Our favorite show on Amazon. We're so excited to be here. Today, we're covering episodes 3 and 4. If this is your first time tuning in, the producers decided to cover 2 per episode. So each after show will be covering 2 more. Luckily, if you're a fan of the show, we're doing a marathon today. So we're covering 3 and 4 now, 5 and 6 in an hour, and then 7 and 8 right after that. So make sure you're staying tuned for all of it. My name's Jeff, guys. If you want to find me online, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham. And I'm surrounded by a group of brilliant panelists, including the beautiful Sam Davidson.
Hello, Sam Davidson here. So excited to be back. I love this show.
And Brianna?
Hey, guys. Brianna Phipps. I'm also so excited to talk about the rest of this show.
And Steph Sabra.
I'm Steph Sabra, and I really can't wait. And I agree, the music is the best.
It's so good.
The best.
Yeah. It's really, really good. So let's talk about, we're going to talk first about episode 3. This episode is called Because You Left, written and directed by Amy Sherman-Ballandino's husband and longtime producing partner, Dan Palladino. How do we feel about this episode overall?
I liked it a lot. You know, I think it started moving the story in different directions, bringing in different storylines, different characters, and I thought it moved it along really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode was fun. I liked the dynamic of the law in the courtroom mm-hmm. via her being in that time period and being a woman, so I had some thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Piggybacking off that, I agree. I feel like it did a really good job of even more so showing the times and kind of the state of women and marriage mm-hmm. and law surrounding everything in that period.
I definitely agree with you guys. I also like some of the family developments we got. I mm-hmm. feel like up until now we've seen sort of Midge's and Joel's family interacting as together because Midge and Joel were together, but we sort of see just Midge and her family now, which I think becomes an important... The more you guys watch the show, this isn't giving anything away, but Midge and her family really become the central focus of the show. As much as it's about primarily Mrs. Maisel, her mom and dad also play very important roles in the show as well. So let's start at the beginning of this episode. We see a flashback right away of Midge and Joel in college. This seems to be a really common motif in the show of having flashbacks at the beginning to sort of give us the past. How do you guys feel about this device as a whole? And how do you feel about this specific one of Midge and Joel in college?
I love flashbacks. Like, I've always loved flashbacks in any TV movie. Because I just like getting that dynamic of who they were beforehand, mm-hmm. before we met them. But in this, it kind of, I wrote down, Joel was an arrogant a-hole from the beginning. Because, I don't know, there was just something about the way he just approached her and, like, put down her drink right away. Was like, no, you're not drinking that. We'll work on that. And right. I'm like, okay, come on. She can drink what she wants to drink. Mm-hmm. She can, like, I mean, there was some sweet parts to it, I guess. But, like, yeah, that was my overall thought on that.
And it's interesting to see that he really hasn't changed at all. Everything, all the insecurities you see now, all of his just jerk habits were there. They mm-hmm. were just disguised by charm that I don't know why she fell for.
See, I kind of have a different opinion about it. The flashbacks, which I do love. I love the flashback device. It made me realize why she fell in love with him. I mean, I think maybe I just have really bad taste in men. And I'm really attracted to that egotistical jerk thing. But, you know, it made me be like, okay, they were once happy, you know. They were once sweet. He wasn't the greatest guy in the world. But he's different, at least to me, than what we see now.
The Joel of it all is a very interesting part of the show. And I feel like there's a range of opinions on how people feel about Joel. We've all watched ahead, but I know some of you guys listening may have only seen 3 and 4. I'll let you know, I think we do get a lot of different shades of Joel as the season goes on. So if you're feeling impatient with him now, stick with it. Some of you guys might warm to him and some of you might not.
I will say, like, you know, just moving forward, there are times where I don't hate on Joel, and you'll see that in the future episodes and everything like that. So It won't be a whole Joel hate fest.
Right.
Well, and as much as I say I like Joel a little bit more now, I never want to see like a 50 Shades of Joel ever in my life. That would be far too much for me.
Fair enough. Well, I do love these flashbacks. I think they're very well used. And they do... Amy Sherman-Palladino has talked about in interviews, she's always been a character forward writer. You know, to say that her shows are filled with plot might not be telling the truth, but that's okay, because if you develop interesting enough characters, they can kind of be the engine for the show. So I feel like these flashbacks are always kind of used to make the characters rounder and wider, and just great. So I love these flashbacks as well. I want to jump right into the beginning of this episode, though, because Midge is in jail again. It's funny. Normally on shows, when we see something happening over and over, I kind of roll my eyes. But it's so much fun to see her in trouble that I'm, like, here for it. How did you guys feel about watching Midge the jailbird?
I feel like if anyone could hold their own in jail, I think she could.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
She's charismatic under any circumstance. And I've never seen a character where... everyone loves her, and I equally love her. Like, I would be a fan in a jail cell with her 100%.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things I love about her character that I feel like I've learned from as a person and as a performer is that she can turn any situation into something that's not terrible. She could easily be, woe is me, like, I hate my life, I hate this, which she kind of does, but she's able to just make jokes about it and carry on. The way she handles herself, so many other women would crumble and cry for help, and she's just like, whatever.
Oh, sorry.
No, please.
I was just going to bank off of that saying, I also just love that even in jail, she's the caretaker.
Yeah.
In her life and in her family and everything, she's the caretaker, and as well as with strangers in jail.
I like that point, Brie, because it's a really interesting mix. Her character is both maternal and has the qualities of maybe like a typical housewife, but she's also this kind of loud-mouthed, brash, spunky woman. And I feel like rarely on TV have we seen those two qualities married, where you see like a maternal feminine woman who's also kind of a spunky badass. I don't know. I just think it's a really interesting celebration of femininity, but also aggressiveness.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about comics is that a lot of the most famous comedians of all time, they were very straight-laced in real life, or they seemed to be, or they were very quiet. And that's kind of, in a way, you know, it's just like very, they're two very different people. Mm-hmm. There's your stage person and then there's your life. And they start to blend into one sometimes, but a lot of times they're very separate. And people will see a very quiet person get on stage and be like, whoa, they're funny. I had no idea they were funny.
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel like she's following in all of these really successful comedians' footsteps.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about the fallout from her her jail sentence. She gets out because Lenny bails her out, which Lenny Bruce will be recurring throughout the show. And we can talk about him, I think, in a later after show. But Midge ends up having to present herself in court. So we meet this kind of quirky lawyer. I think he's a pretty fun character. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I liked him a lot.
Loved.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
The show quickly does such a good job with even the minor characters. Amy Sherman-Palladino doesn't let the writers get away with undercooked characters.
Yeah.
I feel like as a writer, priority...
Sorry.
You're fine. It's just to make every character really rich.
I also just want to shout out all the actors in here, because she writes in a way which can be very struggling for actors, which is like the back and forth. Like, there's no pauses ever. It's like conversations just boom, 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 boom. So for all the actors in this, I just want to applaud them for that, because that can be a really tough thing to do in such a fluid way that doesn't sound weird.
And she's obsessed with long takes. So she'll do these master shots or tracking shots where, like Sorkin is the same way. You have to get it right. And yeah, it's definitely, the acting on this show is sensational. But they end up going to the courtroom, and Midge is placed in this position where, rather than kind of going through a typical like kind of courtroom moment, she's sort of chastised for being a woman. And it becomes this very gendered moment in the courtroom, and Midge eventually refuses to take it and fires back. I loved this scene. I don't know what you guys thought, but
I mean, I really related to it, because I often, you know, if I feel like someone is really being, you know, doing the wrong thing or something wrong is being done, I just can't help it. I have to open my mouth, and it's a problem, you know, and I get that with Midge, but she doesn't care. She's willing to put everything on the line because this is so ludicrous.
See, I feel like that's like my inner monologue, but like not how I'm outwardly. Yes. I just like take it.
Good right. for you. It's probably the better way to live.
I love this scene, because I feel like we're seeing this kind of her. It's almost like a coming of age / coming to consciousness tale of a woman in this society where she... It's not that she's dumb by any means. She's extremely competent. She just has literally no idea how the world works. And to watch her kind of figure out in this space in particular in front of a judge and realizing she really doesn't have rights is just really cool to see.
And the word that got to me the most, though, is like little lady.
Yeah.
That was the word that I was like, my inner monologue was what she was doing.
Yeah, the moral fabric of our country is at stake if you keep doing stand-up comedy, Mrs. Maisel. So she ends up in jail again, and Susie ends up calling her mom to try to get bail money. They're trying to figure out how to bail her out. I really enjoyed seeing Susie talk to Midge's mom, Rose.
Oh, that was one of the best parts of the season.
Sorry, I just want to correct you. I don't think that she talked to her mom to get bail money. I think that was during the first one when she said she's just going to be late getting home for the kids.
Perfect. You're absolutely right on that. But I do want to talk about it still.
Yeah.
And then we can jump back. But no, but thank you for the correction. So how did you guys feel seeing Susie and Rose interact?
So funny.
I felt it was so fun to watch Susie revert to like a child, like a teen. Like I feel like Midge's mom, Rose, has the ability to make anybody just revert to a teenage, like, kid, like, in trouble. And, like, the minute she talks, you're just like...
Yeah.
You're so right. That's a hilarious observation.
Like you said with the characters, it's crazy to know what she's done with Rose and the parents in general, because they're not here that much, but when they are, their dialogue is so funny to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, Rose is just like that neurotic mother, but can get anything out of anyone.
You're so right.
Every Jewish Catholic mom does that.
That's definitely true. And this is, I think, planting the seeds for Rose's anxiety that we see throughout the season of who's this person calling me? Why is she calling me about my daughter? Why, like,
why is there so many secrets?
Why are there so many secrets? Like, there probably wasn't a worse person to call Rose than Susie.
Yeah, you know, but it's time.
Maybe Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yeah, probably. Nope. I mean, I thought at one point her parents must be convinced that Midge is a prostitute or something, you know?
My favorite part is that Susie doesn't remember, like, won't give her own name, and she just is coming up with different names, but, like, not in any way that would, like, I'm trying to phrase it right. So you would think that it would be a while before she, like, forgot what name she gave, but she's like, Joni. Betty, like, in a row.
Yeah. It's like, that's not how you lie, Susie. That's not how it works. It is funny because Susie's kind of this tough, you know, like, no-nonsense woman throughout the whole show. But this is kind of one of the only moments we see her where she's, like, nervous and scared and does not know how to handle the situation.
Yeah.
Fun work from Alex Borstein here. I want to talk about Midge in jail for the second time, but before I do, I want to quickly let you guys know about another podcast we have, and that's our AfterBuzz TV founder, Maria Menounos. She has an amazing and wonderful and very well-crafted podcast that we love. Sam, tell us about it.
So if you guys want to have fun, learn, and grow in all aspects of your life, for those who do, have we got the podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of your life, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know it was us, the marvelous Mrs. Maisel After Show Podcast, that got you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition. Check it out. It's a really, really great show, guys.
It's wonderful, and one of our panelist has been on the show.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's so awesome.
Twice now, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there's so much to learn from it. I made my mom listen to it this Mother's Day weekend. She's nice. Like, I've never listened to a podcast before. I love this.
And of course, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Okay, so Midge goes to jail, and she actually has to call Joel to bail her out.
She needs $200 to apologize to the judge for her behavior.
To apologize to the judge. This was an interesting way to put Midge on the, not the defense, but needing something from Joel. I think the show smartly positioned us where it almost gives Joel the upper hand a little bit, and I think plants some seeds for some dynamics that we'll see later. So
I think it was also fun just watching Joel be in a position where, for like probably the first time in a while, he doesn't know what's going on with her, and she won't tell him. So he does have the upper hand in a way, but it's still like, I'm doing my own life. I need this from you, but you can't ask me why. You just have to do this.
The show does an interesting job of revealing Midge's life piece by piece mm-hmm. to all the members of her world. And I think this is when Joel gets a taste. Something's not right. The thing I really want to focus on, though, for the rest of our coverage is Midge's returning to stand up and sort of her take on not only the court case, but just motherhood in general. I want to pull a quote real quick that Midge says on stage about motherhood. Oh, man.
At the jazz club?
Yes. I have it written down somewhere. I'll come back to it. But her overall point is that, what if all women weren't meant to be mothers? Mm-hmm. We talk a little bit about Dr. Spock, and I know, Brie, I'll have you read that in a minute, who is a kind of famous family planning expert and author during the time. But she says, what if some women just were meant to talk to adults for their whole lives, which I thought was a funny take. And how did you guys feel? Exactly.
I mean, I think that especially, it's still to this day in 2018, if a woman says that, it isn't always well received. Imagine then what, you know, people must have thought of her mm-hmm. for saying those kinds of things. But I think it's true. It's honest. It's more acceptable now, but it still is taboo to say, you know, if you're a woman and, you know, might not want kids or you don't really like them, people kind of cringe. Whereas men, it's kind of okay for them to say that because they're not the one burying the children.
Right.
But I mean, that was a very, very bold, bold thing to say. And I mean, it just shows kind of her bravery and honesty.
Yeah. I mean, going off what you said, it's exactly that. If a guy were to say, I don't want kids, I think it's almost expected in some ways, especially yeah. for people around our age or like, I'm not ready to have kids yet. Like, you just go with it. But if women say it, it does have that stigma behind like, well, why don't you mm-hmm. want this?
What's wrong with you? You're supposed mm-hmm. to do that.
Right.
Especially even more so in that, like, we feel it already here, but in that time period, I can imagine it would be heightened by like 50%.
Yeah. I love that. I love the way that they showed this. And they did such a good job of mixing humor and kind of real life thoughts. And my favorite, when she was like, is this a marijuana joint? Before she went on stage. But it's cool to see how good she is. Just she's taking real life things that's happened and things she's thinking about and then makes it hilarious. So she's just talented. And it will be interesting to see how she develops more of the discipline type comedy that's necessary.
Yeah, they handled the weed stuff really well. I was worried the show was going to make it like where she gets so high mm-hmm. and the joke is like, look how high she is. But they didn't really play it that way.
Besides eating the pretzels.
Besides the pretzels, which was yeah. so funny.
Well, and I love, because I get it, kind of as a woman, we want activities sometimes, especially if you're going to be doing recreational drinking or, you know, whatever you're going to do. It's weird to just sit around. You want an activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's get up on stage. And I mean, and it was awesome. I completely related to it. And it reminded me of times I've seen my mom talk or about marijuana joints. You know, the marijuana cigarettes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
My favorite part of that scene, though, was just the talk about jail, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's like, I've been arrested twice, they're like, for what? Yeah. Jaywalking?
Exactly.
And she's like, indecent exposure. And they're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's like, respect, lady. Yeah.
She's so full of surprises. The show is handling motherhood in a very interesting way, not only from Midge's perspective, but also the fact that the kids really do take a backseat. Like, we've seen the whole show, guys, and we're doing our best not to spoil, but
I think it's evident even in these first three episodes.
Right, exactly. We don't really see the kids. The only thing we see is in this episode, her youngest son, every day she wakes up and he's just staring at her.
Yeah.
So, like, aside from existing, they're really just played as jokes.
And the daughter's just being bashed by her and her mom about her looks, and even though she's what?
Right.
She's
not even 1 year old?
Baby.
I don't know.
Yeah. I actually wrote that down because I was like, I don't know what the purpose is exactly of them taking the backseat, but I was interested to see if it's just how kind of parenting was back then. Like, it wasn't as, you know, hands-on. It was kind of like duties that you just perform and make sure that they go to bed and eat. Or if it's Midge just exploring herself and you realize she's only 26 years old.
Yeah. I mean, I know that my mom still says to me, and my mom is the best mom. She's so hands-on, but she goes, your grandmother, she was, I think that was Midge, like essentially that generation. She was going to tennis all the time. My mom had someone else taking care of her
wow.
constantly. And it wasn't that my grandmother was a bad grandmother, but she just had a lot of activities.
Well, also the time period was different, because I know, like, even hearing my parents talk about their childhoods from a very much younger age than when I was allowed to be on my own, they were off doing whatever they wanted.
Activities,
yeah. Riding around the city on bikes and stuff, as long as they were home when the streetlights went down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there wasn't as... Nowadays, we need, I think, more.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more in the world with social media, with, like, the ability to get into... to the kids and to address them. So I think the time period also lends to that. You just didn't need as much.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think during that time, we did have a lot of hands-off mothers, but they weren't actually allowed to talk about the fact. Like, they had to present themselves as people who, like, women who love their kids, but rather they'd rather play bridge or tennis or something.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about this show is it's one of the first times I've seen legitimate ambivalence towards motherhood. It's not presented as you need to be a good mom or a bad mom, but just, like, she's a mom and, like, maybe that doesn't matter that much for this show. And, like, it doesn't need to mean anything about her character. It just is. She just might not love being a mom, and that's not necessarily good or bad.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it is a flaw. I'm going to be careful with my words here, but it no one's perfect. There's good and bad to every person, and this isn't a perfect part of Midge. Regardless, kids are innocent people that are brought into this earth, I think, that deserve to be taken care of by the people that did so.
Right.
And, you know, Midge's ambivalence towards them, it kind of... it hurts for them, I think, and to see that, too. And I feel bad for the kids. And, yeah, it is considered maybe one of her flaws in a way. And I think any parent, mother, father, whatever, should be there for their children. And I'll say that about men, too.
Right.
And going just off that, since it's relevant right now, just talking about Dr. Spock's book, and we hear one of the lines from Midge, which is actually what is quoted as... one of the biggest lines in the book is, trust yourself, you know more than you think you do, which she says on stage there, and she's like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Right.
But yeah, it looks like this book is basically from childhood to all the way through the teenage years. He gives advice, and it says he even talks about special problems like separated parents and the fatherless child.
Interesting. Well, thanks for bringing that up. I love how the show does incorporate real historical details into its portrayal of this world. The last thing I want to talk about with this episode before we move on to episode 4 is Joel, who comes crawling back in the very last scene, and Midge says no, which I thought was really interesting and powerful, and I want to hear what you guys thought of it.
I kind of thought, how is she supposed to say yes to that? You know, it's not in her character to have ever said yes, and I feel like a lot of people might have been shocked by her saying no. I was thinking, of course she was going to say no. That was a pitiful... you know, way to get her back.
Yeah, I think looking from what we would do today, we would be like, no.
Mm-hmm.
But it is different when every single person in your life is telling you, you need to get back with him. You just wait, he's going to come back. Like, your entire goal right now is supposed to be getting him back.
Right. Yeah.
And so to have him come back and say, I made a mistake, I want to give this another go, and her to say no, it was a really empowering moment for her.
Because you left. That's what she says. And it's like he hasn't allowed himself to realize the implications of what he did.
Yeah, he doesn't think he did anything. I think that was a big part of the problem.
Like, yeah, he had his little crisis and now I'm over it. So, you know, get back together. Right. But what about what you did to me?
Right. And continuing on that, Midge comes upstairs and her dad is there. And I loved this scene. I thought it was shot and written in a very complicated way where Tony Shalhoub's character, Abe, who's Midge's dad, doesn't... like, part of him is like, no, your job as a woman is to be married and get back with Joel. But you can see the 20% of him that's like, I understand what you're saying and I support you. I think that's kind of his journey throughout a lot of this show, is knowing that Midge is Midge and he can't necessarily change who she is, but also recognizing that who she is might not be the easiest way to live during that time.
I mean, that's why I love her father. He's a very complex character in which he's very neurotic and set in his ways and wants things to be A, B, and C. But at the end of the day, you can tell he really cares for everyone in his life. And he actually has some of the most, like, inspirational moments in the show, I would say.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on Joel, Midge, and Midge's dad?
Well, Midge's dad, I love his transformation, because she starts to get less close with her mother and closer with her father. And I think he's just such a great actor. And he's proud. You see, he's proud of her, but he's pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, damn, that's my kid, you know?
Yeah. It'll be really fun to see how they process in season 2, which we won't get to yet. But keep listening and watching our after show. That being said, connected to that, guys, we can be consumed in many ways. So if you're watching on YouTube right now, you're seeing our beautiful faces live, you're seeing some media that we're throwing up, but we also stream as a podcast. So I'm sure some of you guys are listening through iTunes right now. I suggest consuming both ways. Sometimes we have media that you can only see if you're watching. But check us out. If you're on iTunes, guys, hop on there. Give us 5 stars. Write us a review. We'd really appreciate it. If you're on YouTube, hit that like, hit that thumbs up button, and write us a comment. The comments are fun. Like, I would love to hear your guys' take on whether Midge is doing a good job as a mom, what you guys think. But we're always here. We're always around. Our network is the Conversation Network. So we would love to continue the conversation with you. That being said, any more thoughts on episode 3 before we move on? Great. Well, let's talk about episode 4. This was called The Disappointment of the Dione Quintuplets, written and directed by Amy Sherman Palladino herself. How did you guys feel about episode 4?
I liked it a lot. Again, move the story forward, new characters, new parts of Midge, and it was realistic. I think a lot of the things that happen, it's not all fun and games getting up on stage.
I really liked this episode for the family dynamic, for the thought of moving back in with your parents and how they deal with now having children in their lives that aren't necessarily their own children and their own child, but being an adult. And also her having to now kind of be back in a situation where she's kind of a teenager again in a way.
True.
Yeah, I love this episode. I feel like it kind of back... I love the downtown scenes and the comedy scenes, but I think this is important to just... We had more flashbacks and more just like Midge on her own in the city, as well as Midge and Susie's dynamic, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was an important episode for all of that. Again, we start with a flashback. It's this beautifully shot montage where we see Midge moving out in real time, but we see all of her memories growing up in her apartment with Joel for the last 5 years. And the Babs song that we had at the beginning is playing throughout all of this. This was like pretty pitch perfect to me as a way to start an episode of this show.
Yeah, and it shows also that there's a lot of pain going on inside of her. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... And still having to move back in with her parents, still living in that building, though. I mean, could you imagine waking up every day to a nightmare, essentially, that you wished was over? And then you're like, oh, great, in my childhood bedroom again, which is in the same building where me and Joel lived. And then all these old memories come up. And it's, you know, it was cathartic to watch, but also you could feel her sadness.
The flashback for me was so emotional because it shows the emphasis that, like, anything in your life can have for a memory and trigger that.
Yeah.
And even though she's going through all these tough times and all this bad times with Joel, she's seeing a fireplace and remembering, oh, this is that night we spent here by the fireplace. It's sad. It's a sad thing to, like, have to move on from those kind of things.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I am hard on Joel, but that is a marriage. They have 2 kids, and they did have all deep love together. So this montage was my favorite one so far of the season, or flashback.
Definitely. And montage. It could be both. Yeah. Okay, so... As a result, Midge does end up moving in with her family. Bree, you alluded to it. We get to see, it's that thing where whenever you move back in with your parents, no matter what your age is, all of a sudden the old habits of what it was like when you were a teenager kind of come back and the old family dynamics return. Have you guys ever had to deal with this in your lives?
Yes. I moved back home after college for about a year or so. And I just remember going out at night and my dad being like, when are you going to get home?
Yep.
Why? You're staying out till 2 a.m. I'm like, yeah, I'm 21. Like, that's what you do.
Right.
And it was just that this is their house. They're worried about me. I need to let them know things versus being independent, being on your own, and not having to adhere to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, knock on wood, I haven't had to move back in with my family, but I did spend a month at home over in the fall, and I had to admit, I was so Midge. I came home drunk. My mom followed me into the basement, asked how much I had to drink. And I mean, it was quite a bit. And I fell asleep right in front of her with my shoes on. And I woke up to her just in my face going, are you unconscious? Did you just pass out? And I was like, no, I'm a grown up. Leave me alone. And she's chasing me around the house watching. She's afraid I'm going to die in my sleep. I mean, it was like, it felt very on point with this.
It was great. I love all of this. And I think it's just planting the seeds for a lot of what we see with Midge and her family throughout the show. But the primary meat of this episode was Midge and Susie really honing their craft and kind of exploring the underground comedy scene. How do we feel about this subplot overall?
It's my favorite of it. The whole comedy, because I love comedy in general, and to see how they had to have records and go to stores and really seek seek it to learn it, or else you would be like Midge and have no idea what it takes.
Right.
I love the fact that she just goes upon those party albums and finds them, and they're like, oh, those are kind of like, you don't want to listen to those, are a little crass and rude, and that's like, that's her comedy. Yeah.
She's like, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, I found it very realistic, and it's hard for me to watch a little bit as a comedian. The first time I watched this series, I've watched it several times, I had to fast forward through some of the parts because I was like, ah!
Too cringy.
Yeah.
Well, I did love this record store, and it recurs throughout the show.
I also love, just to add in before we move on from it, that Susie making their business cards.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
On a typewriter, yes. One at a time.
So great when people are asking for her business cards and she's like, you really need two? Or can you just make it? Alex Borstein's so great in this. But the thing I liked about this record store scene was these kind of horny nerd guys.
Yes.
Who are just like, they've never seen a female comic before. And they like, this is an example of something that in the wrong show might feel kind of corny and overplayed. But something about the way Amy Sherman-Palladino writes and directs, it just works perfectly. This was such a nice, kind of funny, charming scene.
Yeah.
Just to watch these nerds kind of lose their shit.
It reminded me of Big Bang Theory in the comic book store.
Yeah.
It definitely reminded me of a comic book store-esque feel. Yeah.
Definitely.
Our comic book stores are the record stores.
Exactly. I think that's true. Yeah, that's a sharp observation. Well, some of these comedy moments we see were really fun. I specifically want to shout out the dead mannequin bit.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys felt about this, but I thought this was legitimately funny. It's really hard to create authentically funny stand-up in a show about stand-up. I think, like, very rarely does a show have stand-up in it, and it feels as funny as stand-up would be in real life. But this mannequin bit, I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it was really funny. I agree with you. It can be very difficult to make jokes funny on stage in a show.
Mm-hmm. It also reminded me of how hard it is for a comedian, because depending where you are, you're going to get a completely different reaction. I think they were in Minnesota where it was, and it's like, of course they're not going to have the same humor as people from New York.
Right.
It's just completely different. So I loved him struggling and showing that when they're cracking up and think it's really funny.
Super fun. The show also gives us another moment for Midge to like be a stand-up, even though it might not be technically on a stage. And that's the park scene where she sort of enters this protest rally and ends up being summoned on stage. For the most part, I think this worked. I think sometimes the show feels like it might be stretching a bit in terms of how we can like feature Midge, but I love it every time, so I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. Again, this isn't necessarily based off of a true story, and I thought it was kind of a fun. We could have done without it, you know, if we take something out. But I liked it.
I think that it just showcases that she's a stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where she goes, yep. If she's trying mm-hmm. to be it or she's not, it's just they're just really forcing this down your throat that this is natural for her.
Right.
Yeah.
This is not her trying.
Yeah.
Or she's at her best when she's just seeing what's going on around her and saying it.
Like at her wedding reception.
Yep.
Yeah. She has that observational humor and she can just make anything a slogan. And I also love that it was a time to just show that Midge just really never read the newspaper. She doesn't know what's past her really nice apartment that she later finds out she doesn't own with her kids. Like, she's completely new to everything going on. I'm sure she doesn't have any idea how laws or things work. So just another layer being added into the world building.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the final moment of this comedy training we see is when they go to see a famous stand-up. She's taking notes just to try to develop her comic persona, and he immediately assumes that she's writing in shorthand, trying to steal his jokes. How did you guys feel about this
scene? I love that it wasn't even her being upset that someone was accusing her of this. It was her being upset that they were accusing her of doing it for somebody else.
Yep.
And not for herself.
Yeah.
She wasn't even trying to defend the fact, like, I'm not doing this. I have my own jokes. I'm just trying to say, nope.
Right.
What, I can't do this? I couldn't steal your jokes?
So true, Brie. Yeah, I also love that she was offended, not that they assumed she was stealing, but that she knew shorthand.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm
yeah.
not a secretary. I don't even have that skill.
Yeah.
Yeah, the things she gets defensive about are not necessarily the things that we would have expected her to get defensive about, but reveal so much about her character.
Can we also touch on this, that she doesn't want to use her real name?
Yeah, that's a recurring thing throughout the show. What did you want to bring up about that?
Oh, I think this is just the first time we hear her say that.
Oh, awesome.
So I just want to see your thoughts on, especially you, Sam, because you're a stand-up comic, like, real name versus pseudonym. What do you think?
I mean, I think in these days it's kind of weird to not use your real name, But I get it. Like, especially for her, I completely understand. And I think it's just part of her growing into herself as a person, into herself as a comedian. She's not there yet. She's still insecure about who she is and where she's going. So it's kind of this, like, crutch that she keeps on falling back on, even though the crutch never holds her up and she can't come up with a good name. And it kind of makes things worse. And but, yeah, I found it fascinating because she's not there. She's not this perfect, strong person. She right. still doesn't – she wants to be this other person when she's on stage that's not her.
Yeah, for me, it's symbolic of her inability to fully accept who she is. I think it's sort of the writer's – showing us that until she really embraces her own name, she won't really be able to become a true stand-up comic. Because if great stand-up comedy equals honesty, it's another barrier for her to really access who she is as a comic.
Right.
Thanks for bringing that up. I think that's a really important point. The last thing we really see in this episode, though, is another Joel moment. And that's Midge going to drop off Ethan. And who comes to the door?
Oh, my God.
But Penny Pan. I do want to say, I think as tough as Penny Pan is a character, this actress is doing a nice job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because every time she's on the screen, I want to throw tables at her.
Yes.
She is just like a bird in every sense.
I just love the awkwardness of the entire scene. Just her standing there. Knowing she shouldn't say anything,
right.
Trying not to say anything, Midge being Midge and just going off around her like she's a statue talking to her, and then the kid running off. I also just want to point out, if anyone else thought it was weird, that only Ethan, Joel only seemed to care that Ethan came over and hung out, not his daughter.
Yeah, how is he supposed to take care of a baby?
But I just wondered if, like, I don't know. I didn't know if they were, like, slightly underhanding the fact that he cares about the male son and not the female daughter as much.
Maybe. I'm glad you brought that up because when you guys are talking about the just Midge as a mother, it's just funny because Joel didn't, he was like, I'm going to be able to spend more time with Ethan, like really doesn't care about the baby and also doesn't think that he has to be in any part of the baby's upbringing, like in that beginning phase. So it's like, that's just unacceptable. I know it's the era, but it's crazy to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, maybe she'll get into sports one day and we can connect. But, you know, the scene with Penny Pan.
Activities.
Like, yes, activities.
Activities.
The scene with Penny is, I'm like shaking, actually. It made me so mad. And I mean, I come from a divorced family and a stepmother, and like there were things like that, you know, and it always made me so mad. It made my mom so mad. And the most infuriating thing about Penny Pan. Is that she doesn't know how to fight back. It's like sometimes when you throw punches, you just want someone to throw punches back at you. But she's just so weak and it's, you're not even worth it, Penny Pan.
Not worth it.
No.
Well, Midge comes home and decides she just, I'm trying to remember, this was the scene where Ethan's watching TV and there's drama because they can't sort through the TV situation. So Midge decides she needs a job. Very exciting moment for her character. Very exciting to see where this takes her. Anything else I'm missing in this episode before we move on to some of our other segments?
There was two things I just wanted to touch on.
Yeah, please.
Really fast. One, just the kind of smart little sublines that Amy Palladino puts into these characters where there was a scene where she's talking with her mom about her and her dad are talking politics. And then her mom's like, just let him win.
Yeah.
Just those kind of like little underlying lines that go in there that just show that time period. And like, you're just supposed to take the backseat. You're not supposed to have your own voice. You're not supposed to have your own thoughts. Just let the guys win,
right.
And they'll be happy.
Glad you brought that up. Definitely.
Yeah.
And then with the Penny Pan scene, I just wanted to also add that it was so smart of them to say that the reason she was so upset about this. I mean, obviously, there's the your husband's with another woman, so I'm upset about that. But it's also that he said he needed to leave her because of their life, and here he is just playing house with this girl, still living the same life they had. So what was the point?
And, I was just about to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I questioned that, too. I mean, Joel, what did you want? What did he want? Because he
doesn't know what he wants.
He seems to just be doing what he did with Midge just all over again.
The Methodist version.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I love the way they played that. As someone who grew up in, like, a very Methodist house, I was technically Presbyterian, but, like, same thing. It was just, I was like, oh, this is, like, the Goisha version of their Jewish life. It was very, very funny. I also just want to quickly shout out the Susie and Midge of it all. I know we've been dancing around it, but we get to see them really together kind of hitting the ground for the first time. And they have that conversation where Midge is like, I sometimes sometimes I need a manager, but sometimes I need a friend. And there is some emotion that comes out during it. And I'm always here for the Susie and Midge of it all.
I forgot that there was this episode. That was like my one of my favorite scenes of the entire season. Yeah. They were so... like, that's how women kind of process our emotions sometimes. Well, I'm like the Midge in that, where I'm like, I just need you to let me have this moment.
Yeah.
It's like, definitely the love story of the show.
Oh, yeah. It really is. And it's almost like going to therapy, you know, and your therapist is, you know, giving you tough love to kind of get you through. And you go, I just need someone to listen to me and to say, that sucks. Yeah. If I were you, I would be so upset. And then move on. Like, you know, some women, especially sensitive women, I'm one of them. There's nothing wrong with them. Mm-hmm. With us, they need to be handled a little bit differently. And, like, when we receive information, we kind of... we're going to listen if it's presented to us in a certain way. But if it's presented to us in a brash way, sometimes we're just like, we can't even comprehend you right now.
I've learned so much about that. Whenever Laura's like complaining to me, I'm like, okay, I could either say that sucks and just listen or provide a solution. What do you want from me right now? I'll just do whatever.
Go with the latter.
All right, guys. So that's most of this episode. If there's anything else I'm missing, I say we move on to some of our other segments.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, well, as always, we have our stand-up spotlight. I'm going to actually show you guys a little bit of Mort Saul. He was referenced during the show. He's another stand-up during this time who really started to bring in some of the more observational comedy. So let's listen to Mort Saul.
We were having dinner there, and they had, if you're interested in what they had, you could have kosher food, if you're so disposed. And
Menus?
Yeah, Herman Wolk had kosher food, because he lives in Israel now. And
the regular... Menachem Begum.
Yeah. He had a steak. And he said to Reagan, is this steak aged? And President Reagan said, we try not to talk about age in this house. That's true.
Really?
Yeah, it was good.
That's a good one.
He was really funny.
Give him another joke.
Well, one of the, Haig said, Haig kept saying to me, it's hard to be in a kind of an attitude of festiveness, you know, festivity, when you know that the Russians are ahead of us. They're ahead of us in radar. And they're ahead of us in planes. They're ahead of us in missiles.
He brought this up at dinner?
Yeah, well, it bothers him. So I said, I was eating this fruit salad, which kept eluding me.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to believe that the Russians are ahead of us, being a country that can't build a Chevy. So then he ate for a while, and he said to me, neither can we.
All right, I think that's good for now. I wanted to bring on a talk show appearance just because the show does talk about Jack Parr and all of that stuff so much. So this was obviously later. This is in the 80s, but I think we can see that personality-driven stand-up.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what time period it was, and then he said Reagan, and I was like, oh. 80s. Yeah. Got it.
Absolutely. But I think the conversational just joy of being with someone, we see that in Midge as well. So that's Mort Saul, guys. He's got some other amazing stand-up. I would definitely recommend checking that out. One interesting thing about this show is because we've watched it, I think we're going to avoid predictions just because we know what happened. But what I want you guys to do is if you haven't watched ahead, please put your predictions down in the comments below because we would love to see what you think. For fans of this show, get excited. We're going to be right back here in like 5 minutes talking about episodes 5 and 6.
And you want to just shout out someone that we have in our live chat right
amazing,
now.
Please.
I want to thank you guys for being here and chatting along with us and keep going on. It helps us so much, and we'd love to hear your opinions as well, just like Jeff said. So Simba McReynolds, thank you for being with us today.
Did Simba have any thoughts as we...
Said, I love character-driven stories. All the characters are interesting on this show.
Totally agree, Simba. Such a character-driven show. Join us for the next show, and we'll let you tune in again. That's right, guys, because we are the Conversation-Driven Network. We're always here. We're always wanting to talk to you guys. That said, if you want to connect with me online, guys, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham or hop in the comments below. We'd love to continue the conversation. How about the rest of you guys?
And you guys can find me, Sam Davidson, at SamD43, Twitter and Instagram, and SamDavidsonEntertainment.com. I have some of my own YouTube videos up there of me doing stand-up, so you should check it out.
She's great.
And you guys can find me at Brie, B-R-I, _Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S, both on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at StuffSabra.
And guys, we'll be back here in 5 minutes, so we'll see you soon. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.